everyone, and welcome to episode 20 of the Medieval Podcast. I'm Danielle Cebulski, also known as the 5-Minute Medievalist. After 8 seasons, over 70 episodes, and millions upon millions of viewers, the juggernaut that was Game of Thrones has finally slowed to a stop, although there are already stirrings of sequels afoot. This was a show that brought people to medievalism in droves, for better and for worse, and kept both medievalists and avid fans at their keyboards well past everyone's bedtimes, lighting up Twitter with, well, ice and fire. Peter Konieczny from Medievalists.net and I watched the end of Game of Thrones together, and then we sat on my couch and shared our thoughts on the finale, the show as a whole, its impact on medieval studies, and what its possible future could look like. Here's our candid conversation with massive, massive spoilers as we say farewell to this fantasy fan favorite. All right, Peter, so last night we watched the season finale, the entire finale of Game of Thrones. What did you think of it?
I like the episode. It kind of wrapped up all the kind of storylines, gave me a couple of surprises. So I enjoyed it. I've always kind of liked Game of Thrones. I've all come out with like an open mind. So because I never read the books. So everything was a bit of a surprise. There are ups and downs to the seasons, things like that. But I think it did end off on a fairly positive note.
So what were some of the surprises for you?
First of all, Bran the Broken. I did not expect to see him on the throne. You kind of think like this show has been leading up to like everyone vying for power, everyone kind of, you know, in battles, and the strongest surviving or the smartest surviving. And it winds up being a person who doesn't even really want the throne, and his kind of course seems to be gone. But it makes sense in a way, like in a fantasy way for me, because he is this kind of now otherworldly character. So it's really kind of, I enjoyed that kind of how it transferred to him being the ruler in a way of Westeros. So
you're more generous than I am, because I rolled my eyes at the whole Bran thing, because it was just too, like, I think as a woman, you know, it was too Hillary Clinton for me. Like, there are all these women that are sitting there that have had actual experience ruling, and they're like, who should we pick? We should pick this guy who has had no experience. He's done nothing useful. There's no reason to expect he's going to be a good king at all. So for me, it was like, of course they pick Bran. Of course they do.
Well, one thing is that he has everyone's memories. So, you know, he knows everyone, all the good rulers. So hopefully he can make that choice. And obviously his choice is to kind of stay out of politics, which is probably a good thing if you want to be a ruler, right?
Yeah, exactly. So he goes to his first council and he's like, I'm just going to leave this all to you guys, and I'm going to go find a dragon. After, you know, everyone's figured out that having a dragon in Westeros is a bad idea, you should probably just leave those dragons alone. But Bran's like, nope, I'm not going to rule. I'm going to go find a dragon.
I think it's good. You got to go get that, figure out where he left, because you never know if Daenerys might come back. So
I can't remember his actual name. The king of the White Walkers.
Night King.
The Night King. I'm sorry. I had a lapse for a second there, but he can't actually bring Daenerys back. So unless there is some sort of otherworldly magic that we haven't encountered, which I guess is possible, I think she's done.
So can't we have a sequel? No,
we could have a sequel. I think they're gonna do some spin-offs, aren't they? Are they doing spin-offs?
I know there's about like 5 kind of shows that they kind of put into development. So some are set like in centuries past, but some could be set in like with kind of these spin-off characters. Arya sounds like that could be a good spin-off in a way for her continuing adventures in the world. But I don't expect like we'll see very many of like what happens to Daenerys and the dragon or anything like that. I think that kind of story is all done, and I don't think George R. R. Martin would be very kind of happy to kind of let's keep on this story that I'm no longer writing. So
yeah, it's hard to say what he would approve of or not approve of, because his story is kind of unraveling, unspool in a way, in that you don't necessarily see at the beginning where they're going to end up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, like, I think a lot of the criticism of the this season and a bit of last season as well is the kind of this rushed pace that they're moving along. And that really comes from the fact that the source material isn't there for them. It's only in George R. R. Martin's kind of mind what's the rest of the story. And he laid out like a small narrative for the showrunners to follow. So that's there's a lot of complaints about this season. And that's how I kind of, see everything's kind of stems from that. So I think, yeah, with Martin, he still has these books to write, which we hope you'll see. And I think if you're a real fan, it's like you now have to get the books to really appreciate the kind of story. So.
Yeah, well, I'm one of these people that always has to read the book first. I always read the book first. And I did read these books. I read up to book 4. I didn't read book 5 because I think at that point I sort of got fatigued because he brought in so many characters and so many of them were new. And, you know, I kind of wanted to find out what happened to the old characters before getting to know some new characters. So I did kind of fizzle out on that. But reading the books is a different experience in that you don't see it going in the same way as you do. And the show adds even more violence and even more sexual violence than the books do, if I'm remembering that right. And so that's kind of it's an interesting way that they took that TV show and made it different from the books. So do you expect that you're going to read the books?
When I knew this show was coming out and me and Sandra were going to do reviews of it and we did it for the first couple of years, I made a kind of conscious choice not to read the books so I could get surprised. She had read the books. I was like, all right, I'll have this opinion coming from this fresh look at it while she can have this kind of do this kind of comparison. And I love being the surprises. I loved how, you know, we lost Ned Stark at the end of season 1. We had this red wedding scene, which, you know, left me in like emotional, you know, wreck for a couple of days. And I think that, you know, this show, you know, really did hype up the kind of the violence, the sexuality. It became a thing on the show to have that kind of view of, you know, these sex positions that I think they were called, right? Where it became this kind of part of the show that, you know, for good or for bad, was like synonymous with what Game of Thrones would be. And yeah, again, it was, you know, incredibly violent at times, which, you know, as a medievalist, you know, I looked at, well, you know, I can understand that. I can see where Martin wants to kind of change from the kind of fantasy literature from before, which where violence was cleansed up. Here it's kind of put out as gross and as bloody as possible to kind of give that the reader and now the viewer that aspect that you don't really get in fantasy literature or in fantasy television.
Yeah, I mean, the argument was that, you know, the Middle Ages is a time when things were very violent and you couldn't expect to get away from that. But I have to say, it was hyper-violent in a way that the Middle Ages actually weren't. And that's really important to point out. I mean, I will admit to, I bowed out of watching Game of Thrones for a little while because to me it was too disturbing in that they really leaned into that torture. You know, the series, you know, the season I'm talking about, really leaned into the torture and just drew that out in ways that were sadistic. And they weren't really reminiscent of the Middle Ages and they weren't easy to watch. And it's kind of a thing that was troubling and that you have to wrestle with. And it's one of the things that I think we have to really kind of push back against. And we have with the podcast and with medievalist.net and with a lot of scholars' work, pushing back against this idea that it was hyperviolent. Because, you know, George R. R. Martin does say in his interviews and stuff, this is what it was like. Well, no, it's not really like that. And so it's an important thing to make sure that we bring that across. You know, when we talk about the last episode about Daenerys like raising the city, that kind of thing could happen in the Middle Ages, but definitely was not the status quo. It's not, you didn't just destroy people once you'd won. It was just kind of a strange thing. And I'm hoping that people don't extrapolate stuff about the Middle Ages from that last episode. What do you think about that?
Yeah, like, you know, it's just in terms of the kind of like warfare there was a lot of violence for the sake of violence. It's hard to, you know, in a television show to kind of explain the intricacies of warfare. And what you kind of saw often, like with the battles and sieges, is, all right, we're just going to attack and we're going to fight without really any strategy or idea of why they're doing it. Again, like, you know, Daenerys's decision to destroy the city, it doesn't make any kind of logical sense. And it's not how medieval commanders would have kind of approached that situation. Like, if you're going to sack a city, you're doing it for a reason, say, like, you want to intimidate other cities into surrender. Well, that's not really the case here. This was just kind of, again, violence for the sake of violence, which is necessary, I guess, in a television media. But as a historian, you kind of, like, you roll your eyes a bit on that kind of stuff. One thing that always kind of bothered me, when we, like, George R. Martin says, you know, like, I'm trying to make this more historically accurate. Well, he's also not, like, by hyping up the violence and the kind of savagery, he really does neglect the kind of more peaceful aspects of even medieval society. The church, you know, they're all presented in, like, a terrible fashion, where that's not really the case in the Middle Ages. There's a lot of good people. There's a lot of thoughtful people kind of walking around, and violence wasn't so endemic. It happened, of course, but Martin is trying to push the pendulum of, like, from fantasy depicting the Middle Ages as kind of almost a blissful way, where he wants to put that pendulum way on the other side. And I think he goes too far with that.
Yeah, there's a lot of really great work that's being written right now on the internet, all over the internet, by really great medieval scholars that are taking up things like warfare and strategy, for example, or the idea that George R. R. Martin has of the Middle Ages is outdated and has to do with his sources. And I'm thinking of the most recent article on Public Medievalists, which we can put in the show notes so people can see it. His idea about this being outdated, and you can really see that, and the article mentions it as well, in the way that he deals with people of color, for example, people who are not from Westeros, for example, and the way he deals with them and the way the people from Westeros deal with them. And it's very kind of troubling and problematic in the way that he comes at that, but it is kind of how people back in the day saw the Middle Ages. It's not how we know it actually was.
Yeah, like, I'd say this is something, you know, like, if you're a historian, if you looked at the Middle Ages and read, like, books from the 60s, 70s, 80s, something like that, that's where you kind of develop that kind of idea of the Middle Ages. It's not like, and obviously, you know, he's not a scholar in the sense, like, oh yeah, I'm going to be, you know, reading the latest, you know, literature and latest ideas. If he was following medievalist.net, I'm sure he would have got a bit of that, but no, I don't think he is.
Hey, listen to the podcast. We've got lots about torture, about sexism, all sorts of stuff. Listen to the podcast.
Exactly. Yes, you get that kind of concept. He is, again, a man of his time. So, like, where he's writing, and, like, in the same way that Tolkien, when, like, he has kind of his views, and they're really now outdated for many of us, you know, especially when it comes to, you know, people of color, you know, sexuality, things like that. Like, Tolkien has no sexuality in his work. And that's really reflective of his own kind of period. And, you know, when we kind of talk about literary, you know, these works are written for now, and they reflect a lot more on today's society than any kind of past society.
Yeah, and I think that's why there was kind of so much pressure on this last season of Game of Thrones, because we're looking at it now as this is a reflection of medievalism for our time. So what does it look like for our times? And it is unsettling in a lot of ways. I mean, we're talking about different scholars having articles about this, and Ken Monshine's article from earlier was about, at the end of this, all the people of color, they disappear. They go across the ocean and they disappear and they're gone. And this kind of thing is troubling. And not only that, he brings this up as well with Arya Stark leaving on a ship, and you know, all over the internet, there's historians going, this has got some troubling overtones here of Columban voyages and stuff. And so looking at it, I think there was a lot of pressure on this show, especially this last season, as what is it going to look like as medievalism for our times? It has to deal with things in a way that is going to reflect us. And if it reflects us in a way that reinforces these ideas of violence and colonialism and sexism and all that, it makes people uncomfortable. And that was all over the internet. And it's kind of a good thing to see that people are engaging with this medievalism in terms of our current issues.
Yeah, like, I think, you know, the kind of the topics that we're talking about right now, and the kind of, you know, where we're looking at, you know, different aspects of the Middle Ages, that might be reflective in works of fiction and TV, but not for another generation or so. Like, I don't think what we're talking about really gets filtered down into the wider world immediately. It takes its time. So what we're seeing is what's been filtered down decades ago into medieval scholarship, and now it's kind of emerging. So, and again, you know, what kind of Tolkien's kind of work is that kind of same thing, you know, took a while to reflect into the medieval scholarship. So we kind of can react and look at that and start asking various questions and see, you know, where, you know, we all dream of creating our own TV shows or creating our own movies. So this might be a call for someone to work on something that and see how they can incorporate kind of these newer ideas.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Well, you dream of creating your own TV shows or movies.
I do indeed, yes.
And they're good ideas. Maybe we'll have another episode about that some other time. But yeah, I'm thinking, as we have these discussions and so many great public historians are going out there and talking about this stuff, that my hope is that when we do these spin-off series, they will take it in another direction. And it just occurred to me as I'm saying this, it's kind of like Star Trek did. Star Trek is kind of very opposite in that Star Trek is very positive in what it thinks relationships between people and different peoples and different cultures can be like. But you do see a difference in the Star Trek from the 60s, for example, the way that engages with culture and then the way it does in The Next Generation, for example. And I'm hoping maybe that if they do these spin-offs, they're listening to the buzz, especially of historians, and seeing, hopefully, if they can engage with these ideas in a way that is more forward-thinking. Like, hopefully, like, say they do a spin-off of Arya as someone who's exploring, hopefully they don't do a Columbus narrative, and hopefully maybe they can change this and move it in a new direction.
Yeah, like I think the Star Trek, talking about Star Trek is a perfect example, because that's a show that always set out to be kind of breaking barriers, breaking new ground. And it was always uncomfortable, I think, for like certainly the first Star Trek. You know, these are ideas like we look back on Star Trek and say, you know, oh, you know, like there's nothing really too risque or challenging about that show, and is very comfortable. And same in and again with Next Generation, it's you kind of, you know, you look back on that and now as you kind of look, say, Discovery, you know, where it's very challenging, it deals with issues in different ways. It rattles nerves, which a show should be something that does provoke controversy or debate would be, I think debate's better than the word controversy, but and Game of Thrones did that in its own way. Like it offered new ideas, especially, you know, for anyone that kind of looks at medieval history or looks at fantasy literature. So, you know, in that way, it does break ground. And, you know, we're trying to expect it to break more ground. It became such a big show that I think it's hard for it to move around and explore other ideas. It takes its time, and it takes new directors, new writers to kind of invigorate that. So where they might go, you know, there can be a lot of interesting ways they can go. It'll depend on who they can kind of bring in to say those ideas.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of potential, and that there's a whole world, and they do give you kind of that spin-off feeling when Arya's like, what's west of Westeros? Let's go find that. And it feels like spin-off material. And I think there's a lot of potential to put forth ideas that that everyone is talking about right now in terms of having a way to explore society now through the lens of a Middle Ages. Of course, it is fantasy. We do know that, but it's not an excuse for not dealing with reality. And hopefully these are ways that they can do with that. So that's a hope that I have for it.
The most important thing, though, has to be entertaining. Like the show has done that. It brought in millions of viewers. It got people exposed to fantasy literature where no other kind of show really has done that I can think of. I think there's a lot of ways it can go now. And there's also, it gives other people and other kind of shows and like, you know, different kinds of fields, hey, this is, you know, there are ways we can reach out to a larger audience. So there's a lot of potential. So, and I'm going to thank, you know, the creators and George R. R. Martin for kind of leaving us on this little path. So.
Yeah, it's definitely got people interested in our field in a way that maybe people hadn't been interested in our field since, Excalibur, maybe in the 80s. So that's good. That's something to be grateful for. And that's something I want to ask you about. What do you think this is going to have? What kind of an impact is this going to have, do you think, on medieval studies moving forward?
Now that the show is over, I think I don't necessarily say talking about Game of Thrones in 10 years to medievalist studies, but it has brought in lots and lots of people saying, like, trying to ask these questions, like, you know, where are they getting this source material? And Martin, being also a person of that looks at history, you want to get see where he got his ideas, like, you know, where does the Red Wedding come from? You know, what are the connections with the Wars of the Roses? So I think, you know, like right now we've seen in the last 10 years this kind of, you know, a little bit of a resurgence in, you know, interest in medieval studies. It's been reflective in other kind of TV shows like Vikings. I think the fact that this was so successful probably, you know, have people looking back and saying, well, can we look at more kind of fantasy, but also look at more of history and see where we can kind of find these interesting things, like interesting stories to tell from the past. So that's where I think, you know, we're gonna see is more kinds of interest in films and television, and in other media as well, to create this kind of stuff. And I think we have this little generation of people that are now interested in the Middle Ages. They were brought through it by Game of Thrones, and they're going into university now, sometimes through courses on Game of Thrones. There's several that have kind of come out in recent years. So those are kind of entryways, and hopefully they'll find it that the Middle Ages have interesting stories to tell as well.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I'm going to ask you this anyway. Do you think it's worth having courses, like actual university courses, on Game of Thrones, or you think that's just kind of too kitsch?
It's way too kitsch.
That's not the answer that you're that you actually have. What's your real answer?
I always think anything that brings people to interest, because if they come to university and they have this background of Game of Thrones, this is something they really love. I don't see too much of a problem where you can say, you know, here's what the show is. This is where they're getting ideas from. This is how, you know, how the show or the book dealt with certain topics. Let's do kind of comparisons. And if that motivates them, I was a person that was motivated to get into history by video games. So it was, and it was like a game on the Three Kingdoms of China, something I was just obsessed with, my friends playing, and I wanted to learn more about that time period. So I wound up, you know, getting interested in history that way, and it furthered me on into that. So, like, it's, to me, these are often just stepping stones. Like, I wouldn't have a whole university program on Game of Thrones. That's maybe a bit too much, but it's certainly worth a course to kind of get people stepping into that door.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's, if you're interested in medievalism, for all of the issues or problems that Game of Thrones might have, it's worth talking about as an entry point. Like as you say, most of us came to medieval studies through medievalism. My story is the same. I came to it through Arthurian literature and through Sleeping Beauty, Disney's Sleeping Beauty. Watching that as a kid, that's what really got me interested in it, and Robin Hood as well. Yeah, it's a true story.
Oh, that's so cute.
It's a true story. It's based on like 14th century art. We get into that for a whole other episode. But yeah, I did get into this through Sleeping Beauty. And then I took a course on medieval romance in university. And that was all based on Arthurian literature. And so my love for King Arthur is what brought me here. So, you know, those stories aren't necessarily great examples of the Middle Ages either. But it's okay to love these things.
Yeah, like, and you know, it's funny, you're brought through the Middle Ages one way. Like when I start talking about, you know, Three Kingdoms and Romance of Three Kingdoms, that's basically guys fighting other guys for an entire book in battles and fights and sieges. And, you know, that's what kind of, you know, drove me into it. And so, but, you know, we both kind of, it both led us into kind of the same place where, you know, today we, you know, we talk about, like, we wind up going to read the same books about the Middle Ages. We wind up enjoying all the kind of aspects that you're talking about, Arthurian romance. You know, I'm very interested. Like, I find that very interesting. You know, I love reading the Icelandic sagas, things that really have nothing to do with that kind of military. So, and you're starting to write more for medieval, you know, like medieval battles.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, I came at it through literature, and now I'm doing more work on warfare than I ever expected. It's true.
So yeah, like again, like, you know, Game of Thrones, you know, it is something that leads people into exploring new topics. And this is like, you have to really, you know, like Game of Thrones and get immersed into its story, into the culture it kind of brings out. But if you do enjoy it, yeah, like it can lead you into finding other kind of, not just like history, but also other kinds of fantasy novels and other kinds of fiction too.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about how it's great that so many historians have taken this up and talked about it in a way that is not alienating. I mean, they do point out that there are problems with this and problems with history, and they'll talk about it. And I think it's a great way so that people who are watching Game of Thrones, especially people of color, people who are LGBTQ, can watch this and say, where was I in the Middle Ages? And then they can find that more easily because there are more people actually talking about the real history and where were people. It's not just a white narrative. And that history, Game of Thrones, in a way, with some of the troubles that it's had in its depiction of different characters, is, I think, an entry into talking about the more and more expanded Middle Ages, which I think is great.
Yeah, like Game of Thrones, it's one of those shows where, like, yeah, there are a lot of criticisms of it. But to me, you know, it's criticisms, we hold it to a really high standard. I think it's been a show that has generated a lot of talk because it has been well written and has been an epic kind of thing that people, millions and millions of people around the world, have loved, and they all want to kind of chime in and talk about it, just like us. So, you know, I can say, you know, I didn't really like this aspect of how they portrayed this society or how they portrayed particular characters. Like, on the overall, like, I have to say this was a really well done show that got a lot of people hooked and got me hooked into watching and consuming it and spending a lot more time than I thought I would on Game of Thrones. So
it's definitely captured people's imagination. So before we go, we should talk about what's on the website this week, and it's going to be Game of Thrones. Yeah, Anything else?
Yeah, we've got Ken Monshine's kind of piece, taking a look at the final episode. We have a nice little quiz about how you have been killed in Game of Thrones. So you can have fun with that. We've also have another kind of thing, we have a Medieval Reads column. It's by Jillian Polak. She's about halfway through the column now, and this one is looking at another kind of a book called The Owl Service. She has little touches that go into the medieval world, but Jillian's been kind of taking a look at, you know, how literature, not necessarily fantasy or you know, historical fiction, but just kind of literature, you know, takes a look into the Middle Ages and how it can, how it helped inspire her to get into medieval studies as well. So we have that on the website.
It's a very timely topic. Medievalism and how it makes medievalists, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Everyone, all of us, you know, get into, you know, the Middle Ages came from somewhere. So, and often it is nothing to do with, like, you know, this love of history, or, you know, or like, oh, one day, you know, one day I'll be really interested in, like, Franciscan theologians, right? No, that, you know, you're brought in some way, and that's the great part of what we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Peter.
Thank you.
Some of the articles we mentioned in our chat were Game of Thrones is based in history, outdated history, by Kavita Mudan Finn, which you can find at thepublicmedievalist.com. And Game of Thrones, The Final Scorecard by Ken Monschein, which you can find at medievalist.net. As Peter said, there is more on Game of Thrones and all sorts of medieval goodness, as always, on medievalist.net. You can follow medievalist.net on Facebook or Twitter at medievalists. And if you're interested in supporting the work there, as well as this podcast, you can visit patreon.com/medievalists. You can follow me, Danielle Cebulski, on all your favorite social media platforms at 5MIN Medievalist or 5 Minute Medievalist. And you can find my books on Amazon. As always, our music is Beyond the Warriors by Guy Frog. Thank you for letting me be a part of your medieval media. Have yourself an awesome day.